I would have enjoyed seeing them put their skins back on after being the werewolves.
How does that fit?
Welcome to Wreckatopia, a happy home for recommended movies, TV shows, music, video games, foodstuffs, and more from two people you can definitely trust. Trustability varies by region, no guarantees implied. And now, here are your hosts, Chris Atkinson and Aaron Dicer.
Daddy! I'm back from trick-or-treating!
Billy, shh! Please, be quiet.
Why?
Because you'll bother the neighbors. Now go watch Charlie Brown, and I'll be in a minute.
Charlie Brown's an asshole!
Hello, everybody. It is Wreckatopia, episode 137. My name is Chris Atkinson, joined by Jonathan Watkins.
Hello, hello.
And yeah, the intro to this episode is going to say Chris Atkinson and Aaron Dicer. And then you're going to be like, who the fuck is Jonathan? If you haven't been paying attention recently, anyway. Today's big recommend is Trick or Treat. Jonathan has recommended to us today. Would like to give a shout out to chat who have come back here on a Tuesday. Some people even came early this morning to catch a podcast that was not there. And I think that's something that we can easily blame on Aaron for being stupid. So that's what I'm going to go ahead and go with. So anyway, Jonathan, do you want to start us off with the small recommends?
It's no big deal.
It's so small and light.
It's small. It's tiny. It's petite. It's wee.
I do. My first one is one I had no idea I would be recommending because I don't even know why I chose to go see it in the theater. But Smile 2 just came out this past week. And I don't know. I had nothing going on late Friday night. My wife and daughter were both doing other things. So I was like, I'm going to go watch Smile 2. I could have watched like Saturday Night or Wild Robot, but I was in a Halloween-y mood. Mm-hmm. Not a huge fan of the first one at all. I mean, it's probably okay. I guess it's okay. I've only seen it a couple times. Once was for sinning purposes, but wasn't a huge fan of it. Other than Sosie Bacon, have you seen the first one, Chris?
Yeah, I saw the first one.
It was you guys were actually making fun of it last week when Aaron was talking about It Follows. I remember now.
I remember liking it okay. I felt like it was just so similar to It Follows that I thought it was fine. But I wasn't a big, huge fan of it. But I'm hearing the sequel is better than the first.
Yeah. It definitely is because I really like this. I can't quite call it great or anything, but I'll explain that. But I really enjoyed it. I had a really good time with it. So this time around. Naomi Scott is in the lead. The thing I probably sadly most know her from was that last Charlie's Angels movie, but she's been in a bunch of stuff. But she is the lead in this. She is playing a pop star, one of the biggest pop stars on the planet, kind of a trap character.
Yeah.
She has just come back. She was in a horrible car accident. She had to go to recovery for drugs and alcohol and stuff. So she's about to have her comeback show at Madison Square Gardens. And, she's obviously not allowed to take any drugs or anything. She can't take painkillers and stuff because she's an addict recovering. But she has back problems from the car wreck. So she goes to a person she went to high school with that is now a drug dealer and buy some Vicodin for him, only to find out he's got the smile virus or whatever. And she gets screwed because of that. And so the rest of the movie is just following her, like trying to deal with what's going on and then also managing to still make her comeback appearance in the concert. The main reason this works is because Naomi Scott is unreal. Like she's in like every scene. And so if she doesn't work, the movie suffers big time. She's great. I really hope this boosts her up to a little bit of a high. I don't know. I mean, horror films, you never know, but you know, this is a pretty big franchise film. The last one made a lot of money. This one's looking like it's going to make a lot of money. So I look forward to that. It kind of reminded me of Jessica Roth and Happy Death Day. Like it was that kind of when you're watching it, you're just like, wow, this movie, you know, is only working because I love this person. Mm. And that's kind of what it is here. Parker Finn, who's the writer director, he's back. He tries to build the mythology out, which is positive and negative. Like, I kind of liked, he kind of does some good world building. And the ending is great. The ending made me really want to see part three, which I'm assuming is going to happen now. It looks like it's going to take it into an interesting direction. The one caveat is that I don't really understand, like, what the goal is of this thing, like this entity. I mean, I guess it could just be like a trickster or something, but when he starts kind of trying to work in this mythology, and like you have one character at the beginning, which is like the one loose plot thread character from the first one is in the beginning, and you find out that he's trying to use the smile thing to his advantage, and it's almost like he's like a vigilante with it, and like I don't really understand how that would work, because it kind of seems to do its thing when it wants to. Like, I don't know how you would control it in the way this person is. So it's stuff like that would pop up, and I'd be like, we could have just stuck with Naomi Scott, just, you know, and gotten us to that ending. But fun. I mean, just one of the biggest surprises of the year for me, because I did not think this would be anything better than maybe okay, you know. So
yeah, it's interesting. This movie, the first one was a really, like, it was a decently big hit. I think it made $100 million here in the U.S.
Yes.
The second one, just recent, you know, its opening weekend was just the exact amount as the first one. So it didn't gain any following, and it didn't lose any following, and it's right there. And the word of mouth on this should probably carry this over for a while, I imagine. So I'm looking forward to it. I want to see it at some point. There is now a ton of stuff in theaters that's probably just leaving now because I haven't had a chance to see
Same.
It. But
there's four new movies opening this week that all look good.
Yeah. Like, so I don't know. It's crazy these days. I can't get out to watch these things. One that I caught up on though was Eli Roth's Thanksgiving.
Nice.
This was, you know, based on the trailer that he made back in 2007 on the Grindhouse movie. He finally got around to making this, which is basically a horror comedy murder mystery type movie. I would call it almost like an I Know What You Did Last Summer, except without the, like, you know, the 90s Scream influence or whatever to it. Going in, you know, this is Eli Roth, so you know he's going to make things super bloody and everything, but it's so over the top. It's almost funny the way the death scenes happen in Thanksgiving. But some of the main stars in this, Patrick Dempsey is in this. Who else is in this? Gosh, it's like a lot of people.
Gina Gershon.
Gina Gershon is in this. And there's a lot of people that I don't recognize. I may have seen him before, but Nell Verlacky, I think is her last. Is her how do you pronounce that name? Is basically the main person in this. But the story is simple. There's a Thanksgiving Day just before Black Friday sale at this big huge Walmart type place. Obviously not Walmart for legal reasons, but they open up this store on Thanksgiving night and they don't hire enough security guards, and a variety of circumstances, including the giveaway of free waffle irons, leads to a stampede of customers coming through the shop, and many people die. A year later, and this is the I Know What You Did Last Summer of it all, people start getting killed, and the killer is sending stuff over social media that says, I'm watching you, and basically almost Final Destination, like, shows who's next in the entire thing. So it's a bunch of, you know, it's a murder mystery with a lot of, like, you know, bloody kills, and it's a whodunit too. So you have to figure out who's the one who's possibly doing this. It's a lot of fun. I think I don't typically like Eli Roth movies, but I feel like this one, he just decided to let loose and have a lot of fun, and I had a lot of fun with it. So
Yeah, I saw this in the theater. I've watched it like one more time, I think, since then. I really enjoyed this movie. I don't like Eli Roth. This might be like the only film of his I've seen that I genuinely like. I mean, there's some things in Cabin Fever that are kind of fun, but for the most part, like this one, I was surprised at how well this worked. I also like that he apparently said when it was released that, because did you mentioned the Grindhouse thing, right? The trailer. Mm-hmm. Okay, sorry, I couldn't remember. Getting old. Yeah, so after the Grindhouse trailer, this got announced that it was going to be made. So it had just been sitting, you know, it took like however many years, 15 years or whatever, 20 years. But I guess, yeah, like 15 years. But he said that, so what he went into this with the mindset was that they had already made like five or six Thanksgiving movies, and this was like the remake those movies. I thought that was pretty cool.
I should have gone back to watch the trailer, but I do remember the trampoline scene being in that trailer.
Well, and the I guess I want to say what the turkey at towards the end. I think that's in the trailer.
Yeah.
In some form or fashion of that. I'm not a big like, oh, the kills were cool, but there was definitely creative kills. And the mystery is not actually bad. It's not a bad mystery at all.
Nah.
I mean, it's not great, but it's not Knives Out or anything.
Yeah, I mean, it's your typical
for
like, you know. Yeah, it's your typical, the motive is revenge. Who's got the most, you know, got the most motive for revenge in the whole thing? And it's not great, but it's fun. It's just definitely fun.
I think there's a second one coming out next year. I'll watch it.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. My second one is, and pay very close attention, listeners, to the last letter of this word, because it is terrified. It is not Terrifier, which I'm not recommending this week, nor have I seen Terrifier 3. But this is Terrified. This is an Argentinian horror movie from 2017 or 2018. I can't remember when it was actually released here. It's basically been on Shudder for the last like 5 or 6 years. I saw it like a couple years ago, and I enjoyed it. And then I got to watch it again this weekend. We have a local, Chris and I have a local art house theater where we're at called the Bell Court, which if any of you have come to Sin Week, you might have been there. They do a horror marathon every year called 12 Hours of Terror. And this was one of the movies they showed. So this was my second viewing. And man, this movie is really good. Even though I knew like all the scares, it still freaked me out. Like this movie as an adult, this is one of the few movies as an adult that I would say is sort of scary. It's kind of a super basic plot though. There's these three houses that are all next to each other. One's across the street, two are next door to each other. They're all being fucked with this, some sort of entity, not Smile, but some sort of actual ghost or something that's messing with them. Some kind of demonic presence. And then, the cop on the case is this guy. He's like an older cop. He's like, I've got to retire in like 2 months. I don't want to deal with this shit. I don't know what's going on. He starts kind of figuring out that it's not, there's one main reason that I don't want to give away that he figures out that it's not humans doing the stuff. So he brings in some paranormal investigators. So it's kind of got like a Poltergeist Insidious vibe to it, but that's really the only reason it does. Other than that, it's a very different type of movie. And I don't want to explain too much more because I think, going into any movie, not knowing stuff is obviously great, but I think you'll really be able to experience how kind of, no pun intended, terrifying this movie can be if you go in like that. We make fun of jump scares on CinemaSins. I mean, jump scares are usually just kind of cheap. They can be done well, and there's probably three of the best in this movie. And I got to experience it with like 300 people in a theater screaming when these things happen. So, yeah, it was that's definitely, I mean, that's kind of hard to see it that way since it wasn't ever released theatrically here. So I got lucky, but I still think watching it at home, especially around this time of year, I think you'll really get a kick out of it. Terrifying.
I have not seen this movie. I'll need to watch it at some point, but, on the Bell Court 12 hour things, when does it start and when does it end? Cause you were sending messages like, I think at 6 or 7 o'clock morning.
It's the first movie's at 10 PM. The last movie ends around 10 AM. So it's 10 to 10. It's
and
wild.
Are there breaks or do they go, are they just go?
No, I mean, you get like, they have some other stuff. There's like a costume contest. So, I mean, you get like, sometimes you get, it depends on the length of the movies. This year we had a lot of breaks because all the movies were pretty short. But I think it was last year, they actually only had like 37 minutes of extra time. You know, it was something crazy like that. But yeah, this year there was a few breaks. But I'm old, so I'm surprised I can do this. But I can't sleep sitting up in a chair. So like I never fall asleep. But I do get to a point about 4 or 5 in the morning where I start feeling a little crazy. And then once I pushed, and that's always like that movie is always like the mind fuck movie. They are purposely putting like the most mind fuck movies at that time period. So that helps, you know. But then usually when I push through that, I'm good. I'm fine for the last two movies. So, and then I come home and I crash for like 6 hours or so. But yeah, it's fun. It's something to do. It's like my one yearly thing that like I do.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's a good time.
Yeah. I don't think I have the stamina these days to do that type of thing, but maybe one day I'll get up. I'll
yeah,
get
these
up
aren't the recliners either. These are like old school theater seats.
They're old school seats. They're new, but they're the old school seats. They're not. Yeah, they definitely don't recline or anything like that. My last small recommend was a movie that I was considering to make a big recommend. The only issue I had with it was the violence in this movie that I'm about to talk about is not that much, but it's so visceral that I was wondering if people wanted to sit through something like it. And I didn't know if I wanted to go through it and everything, but I'm going to small recommend it just in case. In case you guys want to check it out, but Takashi Miike made a movie back in 1999 called Audition. And this is a story of a producer who loses his wife. He's got a grown son, I think. It may be like a senior in high school or something like that. He's lonely and everything. And one of his producer friends says, why don't we take one of our scripts and we will have auditions for women who will be in this movie. And then out of that crop of women that we audition, you can start like maybe dating one or two of them and one of them could become your wife. And there is a lot of like connotations to that, obviously. It won't take you long to go to somebody like Harvey Weinstein when you hear a premise like that. He goes into this with the best intentions though. And so the auditions take place and he reads a bunch of women's like resumes or whatever. And one of them he's struck by immediately, and he doesn't even need to see the audition. He's just ready to like just ask her, you know, out. Now everything has got to be like done in a subtle way so that it doesn't seem like they just did that in order to get her, you know, to have a date with him and everything. But she seems pretty eager to meet him outside of work. And she's immediately told that, you know, this movie probably won't even get made or whatever. But hey, if you still want to hang out with me, that's fine. But everything that she says about herself, including on the resume and everything like that, they're finding out that they can't really verify a lot of the things that she's putting on there. She can't verify much of the stuff that she says either. And so this guy gets very, very curious about it, and we find out and this is not a spoiler to this movie, we find out that I won't spoil too much, but I will say that she is definitely not a benevolent person, even though she is put that is she's presenting herself that way throughout. Now there are reasons for this, and you can debate whether or not she's just a product of her upbringing, but this is a very, very, really well done movie. In fact, it works as not a horror movie for a very long time. Mm-hmm. Like there's not much horror in this until like it gets about mid to past midway on this thing. Very interesting film. I had not seen it since the theaters, and I was worried about how, I don't know why I was worried about how our audience would take this and everything. I could have just went with it, and you know, if you hate it, you hate it or whatever. But I just figured I wanted to at least mention it, and so that some of you out there who would go out there just know that there is some, like I said, when I picked The Thing a couple of weeks ago, I was like, The Thing probably has grosser stuff in it than this movie does.
Oh, this was the one that you were
Yeah. But this movie, the violence in it is a little bit more, it's more real. So you kind of have this, it's a little bit more shy away from looking at it type of stuff. But anyway, I really, really, really recommend Audition mm-hmm. if you're into the, a more extreme type of horror. Like I said, the most extreme parts don't happen until way later. And it works just as a regular movie, like non-horror movie, for such a long time in it. So I recommend this.
Yeah, I do too. No, this is I've seen it a couple times. I didn't see it in the theater. That must have been an interesting experience with a crowd, although I don't know how packed it was or anything. But that would have been interesting. So the Suspiria tagline, the 1977 Suspiria tagline, is something like, the only thing scarier than the last 10 minutes or the first 77. I think you could flip that for Audition.
Right.
We're talking about another movie with one of the greatest jump scares ever. That the bag.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
All I'll say. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
It's a little too much for me at the end, but it's just, I mean, as far as, but it's supposed to be. I mean, I don't think anybody's mm-hmm. supposed to enjoy the last 10 minutes or so, but
right.
It's very effective and it's very well done. It's well acted, well directed. I'm not much of a Miike fan either, but mm-hmm. that is who did this, right? Did you say
that? Yeah, Takashi Miike, yep.
Yeah, so his Itchy the Killer messed me up for a couple months or so after I saw that.
He's one of those kind of directors. And if you remember, he's also in Hostel for a brief mm-hmm. moment where he comes out and who's it? Is it Freddie Rodriguez? I can't remember who it is that's in that movie.
I haven't seen that since the theater.
I've forgotten who it was. But he's like, what's going on in there? And he's like, and Takashi Miike is like, oh, you don't want to go in there. You spend all your money in there. And that's basically his little cameo in Hostel.
Good stuff.
Anyway. All right. We're going to go on to our big recommend, which is Trick or Treat, which is, as Jonathan said last week, technically from 2007, but apparently had a release mainly in 2009. I guess it was festival circuit or whatever. Mm-hmm. Anyway, take it away. Talk about Trick or Treat, Jonathan.
Hi, podcast listeners. Danae here, and I want to tell you about Mint Mobile because they saved me money, and I appreciate that. Mint Mobile also made it easy to save money on my phone plan. So here's how it works. Here's how to get great wireless for $15 a month with the purchase of their 3-month plan. You go to mintmobile.com/recotopia, and you're going to see all of their plans. And right now, all of the 3-month plans are just $15 a month, and that includes the unlimited plan. All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. You can use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan, and you can bring your number along with all of your existing contacts. And that's it. That's how easy it is. Just you go and you look at the information. You're like, yeah, that doesn't seem so bad, does it? The hardest part is just deciding to break up with your current phone people. To get this new customer offer and your 3-month premium wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/recotopia. That is mintmobile.com/recotopia, and cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/recotopia. Heads up, $45 upfront payment is required. That's equivalent to the $15 a month, and new customers on first 3-month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details.
Why do so many dogs die before their time? Actress and dog activist Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. Superfood Complete by Badlands Ranch is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including premium protein-packed beef, nutrient-dense organ meat, heart-healthy salmon, gut-healthy vegetables, and several superfoods vital to your dog's health. And because high-heat cooking can add unhealthy things to your dog's food, Superfood Complete uses air drying, so it gets cooked low and slow. This means it has the convenience of kibble, but the health benefits of whole foods. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible benefits, go to BadlandsRanch.com/save50 right now to get up to 50% off your order and a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's BadlandsRanch.com/save50 today. All dogs are unique. Your dog's results can and will vary.
I'm fine. It's just that you're so big.
It's so huge.
It's a good rule, but this is bigger than rules.
It's bigger on the inside.
Is it?
I noticed.
Trick or Treat's written and directed by Michael Dougherty. Prior to making his directorial debut with this film, he had written X-Men United. I don't know if anybody still calls it that. And Superman Returns. After he directed this, he directed, you might know him from Krampus and Godzilla King of the Monsters. And then he hasn't directed anything since then, although he keeps talking about Trick or Treat 2. But that has still not happened yet. This did premiere in 2007. It was at a yearly film marathon in Austin called Butt-Numathon, which no longer exists, and you can Google that because I'm not about to get into that shit.
all you got to say is Harry Knowles, just go ahead. Yeah,
that was like his birthday or something, right? Something like that. And I don't know. It doesn't matter. I don't want to talk about him. I also want to make a note that this is an anthology horror film. It's in a unique way, but if for some reason you're listening to this and you haven't seen the movie, that's why it's confusing, because we're going to be going a lot of back and forth between characters and whatnot.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So the movie begins with an instructional safety video titled Trick or Treat Safety, which gives the guidelines of always stay on sidewalks, never go to a stranger's house, and never go out alone. Fast cut to a jack-o'-lantern, and then we soon meet Emma, played by Leslie, law-abiding citizen Bibbs, and Henry, played by Tomo Pennicott, who I'm pretty sure is in every Canadian production that has been made in the last 20 years. Emma is not a Halloween fan, but decided to humor her husband since he loves the holiday and go out on the town. Now they have arrived back home. Emma wants to take all the decorations down and get rid of the pumpkins. Henry explains that they need to keep the jack-o'-lanterns lit due to ancient traditions. Emma unlights it anyways, and Henry says, "You should be more careful. There are rules. You might upset someone." And this whole time, we see someone across the street staring them down, slasher killer POV style. Emma decides to take down all the decorations and sends Henry upstairs to put on the tape, which we find out is a blank VHS tape labeled Nature Special. Emma starts getting a little concerned about a person dressed in a black hoodie staring at her from across the street. We find out he's just waiting on his friends to pick him up or whatever. So then she starts putting sheets away in a box. When she throws the last one in, something jumps out of the box and attacks her, slicing her open with what looks like a half-eaten pumpkin sucker, and kills her. Three kids witness this, but they just run away because kids, ding. Henry has fallen asleep watching his quote-unquote nature special, and when he realizes Emma has not returned, he goes outside to check on her. He finds her mutilated body with her head adorning one of the ghost sheet scarecrows. And that in her mouth is stuffed with what looks like another pumpkin-themed sucker.
Yes.
And we'll have to wait a little longer to find out about Emma's mystery killer. Next, we get a fun opening credit sequence that is very much Creepshow vibes. We then cut to a shot of someone dragging a pillowcase, I think, behind them. Said person is also quickly passing some characters we will be meeting up with in later stories. Then we get a comic book caption that says earlier, and we learn we are in Warren Valley, Ohio, which from all the festivities looks like Discount New Orleans. We then meet our new character to follow. It's Lori, played by Anna Finding Forrester Paquin. She is stuck in a dressing room trying on a dress she is not a fan of because, and I quote, her tits keep popping out, which when you see the dress, that makes no sense because it's like a Red Riding Hood all the way up to her neck. I don't know what she's talking about. Lori and a group of girlfriends, Danielle, Janet, and Maria, are getting ready for a night on the town. When they are checking out, Danielle is very forward with a young male cashier and informs him they are having a little party at Sheep's Meadow, and she would love for him to come as her date. We now cut to the kid from Bad Santa, who will soon find out that even in this movie, they can't all be winners, kid. He goes by the name Charlie here, and Charlie is being a little shit kick. He's being a little shit knocking over people's jack-o'-lanterns as he walks down the street. As Charlie is trying to stuff his bag full of candy that an absent homeowner left out with a note for everyone to only take one piece, Dylan Let's Go to Prison Baker credited as Mr. Wilkins, shows up to catch him in the act. And we cut back to the ladies, who are on their way to the party. Danielle is explaining to Lori that if she just tried a little harder with men, she wouldn't be a virgin at 22. And then Janet and Maria decide to show Lori how easy it is to pick up men and go find a couple guys to bring to the party as their dates. Lori is still dateless. Poor Anna Paquin.
Mm-hmm.
Cut back to Charlie and Mr. Wilkins sitting on the steps of Mr. Wilkins' house. Mr. Wilkins pulls out a big butcher knife, but not to worry, he tells Charlie, it's for the pumpkins, not you. Mr. Wilkins then begins to carve a pumpkin one-handed while giving Charlie a life lesson why it's okay to be a kid sometimes and what Halloween is all about. Charlie starts coughing and eventually ends up throwing up the candy that clearly Mr. Wilkins has poisoned. Mr. Wilkins then drags Charlie into the house to store him somewhere while he deals with some insistent trick-or-treaters who see all the blood and vomit on Mr. Wilkins' shirt and just assume it's part of a costume. They also ask for one of his jack-o'-lanterns, and Mr. Wilkins agrees. Then as the trick-or-treaters wander off, standing behind them, we get our first good look at Sam, who appears to be a little kid dressed up in orange footy pajamas with a burlap sack covering his head and face. He's like a cute version of Friday the 13th Part 2's Jason. Sam takes a piece of candy from Mr. Wilkins and then heads on to the next house. Back to the girls' night out. Lori still hasn't found a date, but the other three are eager to get the party going, so Lori sends them on ahead while she continues to look for a date herself. Back to Mr. Wilkins' story. Mr. Wilkins is now burying a body in the backyard, and it appears to be he might be burying it on top of another body. I couldn't really figure that out. So Mr. Wilkins' son Billy starts screaming at him from the window because he's back from trick-or-treating, doesn't want to watch any more Charlie Brown because Charlie Brown's an asshole. Mr. Wilkins continues to bury the body while a neighbor's dog is barking and trying to get under his fence. He then cuts a finger off the body, throws it to the dog to get him to shut up. We then meet Mr. Wilkins' neighbor, Mr. Krieg, but more on him later. Billy leans his head out the window again and says he wants help carving the jack-o'-lantern. He needs help with the eyes. Meanwhile, the body that Mr. Wilkins is trying to bury doesn't seem to be quite dead yet. Mr. Wilkins finishes covering up the grave and is now going to help young Billy with the jack-o'-lantern. On his way in, he sees Mr. Krieg knocking on the window next door, screaming for help, but Mr. Wilkins says, screw you, and goes into his house. We then find out the jack-o'-lantern Billy needed help with is the decapitated head of Charlie, meaning Billy is well aware of his father's extracurricular activities. Now we go to the three kids that were trick-or-treating in Mr. Wilkins' house. They are Macy, Chip, and Sarah. They are at another neighbor's house, which appears to be one of the teachers having a sexy party of some sort. Chip even laments how he just saw Coach Taylor in a hot dog costume butt-fucking a pig.
Mm-hmm.
A fourth kid, Schrader, joins the gathering. He has brought jack-o'-lanterns he was able to get from other neighbors. So now they have three to do whatever they're going to do with them. And then they end up at Rhonda's house, who is a girl that they are meeting up with to come hang out with them. Now we're back at the downtown party scene. We are taken down a dark alley where a mysterious cloaked figure is getting hot and heavy with a willing female partner, but then she notices blood running down her neck. She might have just been bitten by a vampire. She gets away from the supposed vampire, makes it out of the alley. She reaches a person's arm for help who ends up being our soon-to-be mutilated Emma walking around in her robot costume. Emma looks up to Henry, and they decide that this woman must just be drunk. She then turns around and sees the stranger in the cloak again, and she is killed. He sets her on a bench, made it look like she has fallen asleep drunk. Now we're back to the group of kids. They're walking with a bunch of jack-o'-lanterns out into the woods. Rhonda and Chip make up the rear of the group, and Rhonda is telling Chip all about Samhain, a.k.a. All Hallows Eve, a.k.a. Halloween. They end up at a cliff presiding over a very foggy rock quarry, like the foggiest goddamn rock quarry I've ever seen in my life. They ask Macy why they are here, and she says to pay our respects to the dead. We then find out about the Halloween school bus massacre. Macy tells everyone the story. 30 years prior on Halloween, the parents of 8 mentally disabled children, tired of dealing with their kids, bribe the bus driver to dispose of them. As the bus driver takes the kids to their final destination, we see Sam standing on the side of the road at one point. Things go awry when one of the children gets loose and the bus is driven off a cliff into the quarry. All the children drown and the bus driver gets away and is never found or heard from again. Macy wants to leave 8 jack-o'-lanterns by the lake as a tribute to the deceased. Cut back to Lori, where the movie is still trying desperately to make us believe that Anna Paquin can't find a date in fucking small town Ohio. And then come back to Chip and Rhonda waiting on the elevator, taking them down into the quarry to meet up with Macy, Sarah, and Schrader. They hear howling that Rhonda says sounds like werewolves. As they get down at the elevator, they can see only the light of the jack-o'-lanterns from the other three kids. And when they hear them screaming, Rhonda, leaving a scared Chip behind in the elevator, decides to see what's up. And when she comes out of the fog, she sees about half the sunken bus sticking up out of the water. What appears to be some of the dead kids from the accident appear and start chasing Rhonda down. She then comes on one of them, feasting on Chip's intestines. Rhonda, losing her glasses, falls backwards and hits her head on some rocks. We then find out that this is Macy, Sarah, and Schrader playing a prank on her. After Wanda wakes up, the real ghosts of the eight kids actually do show up. The four of them find Rhonda already in the elevator going up to the top, leaving them to be killed by the ghost kids. Cut back to Lori, who is now in the woods, walking to the party dateless, and the vampire from earlier pops up out of the shadows. Quick cut back to Danielle and Maria, as they are wondering when Lori will get there, and Danielle makes a strange comment about their mother always saying that Lori was the runt of the litter. Now back to Lori, where Vampire Guy is attacking her by quoting Little Red Riding Hood in her ear. And then back to the party, where Danielle sees what she thinks is a screaming Lori falling from a nearby tree. But when Danielle lifts the hood of the cloak, it's Vampire Guy under it, who is clearly hurt and in a lot of pain. We then find out the sharp teeth in Vampire Guy's mouth are fake, and when the mask is pulled off, we see it's none other than dun-dun-dun, Mr. Wilkins, who did tell his son Billy earlier he had a date. Mr. Wilkins takes in his surroundings and sees a lot of the dates that were brought to this party are now dead. And then we find out all the women here are werewolves. And at the end of the transformation sequence, we see little Sam sitting on a log watching everything to his delight. Now we're back to Mr. Krieg's house. Hope you remember him. And we get another comic book caption reading earlier. Mr. Krieg is played by Brian, the first Hannibal Lecter Cox. Krieg hears some commotion and walks over to his window to see someone running around the house throwing eggs at it. Krieg goes outside and we see his dog is chewing on the finger Mr. Wilkins gave him, and we get to witness the earlier Krieg-Wilkins conversation from his perspective. Krieg then goes back in to find his dog barking at the front door. When Krieg opens the door, there are all of a sudden tons of lit jack-o'-lanterns that were not there before. He goes back in and sees his dog barking at the upstairs, and he sees the doggy door on the back door is moving back and forth. Krieg looks up the stairs and sees a little mischievous figure running through the hall. Could it be Sam? I mean, you know it fucking is. All kinds of craziness starts happening. Krieg finds a detached hand in his bed. A jack-o'-lantern lights up out of nowhere. Trick-or-treat written all over the walls and what looks like blood. Sam approaches General Stryker with a candy bar knife. And Krieg fires the gun, but Sam is too quick. More fighting ensues, and we get to see Sam's face underneath the burlap, which I guess is a pumpkin skull. That's what I'm calling it. Krieg finally gets a shot of that connects with Sam, and then he proceeds to put a few more bullets in him for good measure. And while most of Sam's body is down for the count, his unattached hand seems to be working just fine. Surprised Evil Dead 2 didn't sue. Sam rises after his hand reattaches. He breaks Krieg's arm and attempts to stab him in the chest, but Sam's pumpkin sucker knife hits Krieg's bulletproof candy bar, and then Sam just gets up and leaves the house. We then see a picture burning in the fire, and it's a picture of the kids from the Halloween school bus massacre along with the missing driver. We then cut to more trick-or-treaters at Krieg's house, who he very nicely gives candy to. We see young Billy handing out candy, waiting for his dad, not realizing he will never see his dad again. We see Rhonda on her way back home, almost getting run over by our four werewolf women. We see Sam staring at Krieg's house from the sidewalk. And then Sam's attention is taken by Emma and Henry returning home and can only assume that Sam is waiting his turn to kill Emma. He's still got that unused pumpkin sucker shiv after all. So we've come around full circle, but wait, there is one more knock at Krieg's door. He opens the door to see it's the eight dead children from the bus massacre because Krieg was the bus driver all along.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah. That was Trick or Treat.
Right.
What'd you think, Chris?
Yeah. So this is a type of movie that I really, really enjoy. It's very simple. If you were to... I mean, you could call this one of those take your brain out type movies or whatever, because you don't really have to follow it closely or anything like that. However, I think people will be rewarded for following it closely, because there are a lot of things in this that are really fun. The throwaway line that you hear the kid say about, you know, the hot dog fucking butt fucking the pig or whatever. Well, later on, we see somebody in a hot dog costume getting like rolled over to where the victims of the werewolves are going to be and everything. And it's a really, really fun detail that they throw in there. Like, wow. These ladies hit up everything that we saw in this movie, didn't they? I like also, you know, when you recall dialogue later on that happened while they're in the dressing room, they're talking about eating people, but like everything sounds like sex. Like it's like, oh, we're going to go out there. We're going to find some fresh meat and all this other stuff. And it's, and it doesn't really like register until later on when you see what they're all about and everything. So I enjoy like all these kind of stories where each one of them has a definite arc, but there's always this one little trap door type of thing that happens, a little surprise that you weren't expecting, coming in this, coming at the end of all of these things. And so like, that's why I generally enjoy this type of movie. the stories are interconnected, but they're not like, you know, they don't rely on each other in any way or whatever. But just a whole lot of fun. I just dig this type of genre. And for a moment there, I'm just to completely go way too far ahead and just tell you of a double feature I did not come end up with on this one. I just didn't have the confidence to make this one a double feature. I almost made Hoodwinked the double feature on this, the animated Hoodwinked, because then you have a Little Red Riding Hood in that as well, and just the way the story is told and everything. But anyway, it's fun seeing a movie like this where it feels like it's not made for that much money, but you have a lot of well-known actors. Mm-hmm. Dylan Baker, man. I for a minute there thought that he was kind of playing a different kind of monster from the one that he played in Happiness. Do you remember Happiness?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
I thought he was kind of playing that character again, basically. Happiness, by the way, if you ever go out and seek that movie out there, guys, talk about some trigger warnings, that movie. But Dylan Baker plays a character I thought for a moment there was kind of like a sort of an offshoot.
I can see that.
Of that. The question I had about the scene where he is burying the kid in the backyard is, so the kid definitely like moves or something, and he has to hit him over the head again or something like that. Mm-hmm. And so the question I had was, since his head is inside the house later,
I think it's a different kid.
It's a different kid. Okay. So
I think at one point a sleeve, like you see a sleeve or something, and it's like a red, white, and blue kind of thing. And that's not that's not what Charlie was wearing.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. I just assumed that it was the kid because it took him, you know, they made a big deal about how hard it was for him to push the body into the hole because it's apparently this big kid and everything. And then I was like, did I miss something? I must have on all of that. So,
well, and Nick Jagged just suggested maybe the body underneath it wasn't dead. So I don't know. I mean,
yeah,
one of the bodies was moving. So
think about his character, man. He's having quite the night. Isn't
I know.
He? Like, yeah. Like how much stuff is he getting thrown? Like, how much stuff is he getting accomplished all in one night? Like, killing kids who come up to his door. Oh, he's also got a party. He has a date, he tells his kid. And like later on, you know, he's killing that woman in an alley, and then he's like going to the party later on with Anna Paquin and everything. That's another great little flip reveal. Like, if you just you put yourself in the idea that these women are you know, in over their heads and everything, and like you ask a bunch of strangers to a party, see what happens. There's going to be some really creepy dudes, and yeah, of course there's some creepy dudes, but they can handle themselves because they are werewolves. And the way they did the werewolf stuff in this is some completely different from anything I've ever seen before. You know, we're used to that American Werewolf in London type transformation and everything. Here, they're just pulling their skin off.
Yeah,
and
it's
everything.
Like they're like the skin is the costume, right? I mean, that's,
yeah, exactly.
That's basically what it is. Like, they're unzipping the skin.
I would have enjoyed seeing them put their skins back on after being the werewolf.
Yeah, how does that fit?
Like, yeah, I would have liked to have seen that. That would have been awesome.
I feel like that would be like a wetsuit or situation or something where it's not as easy to get back on after you've already taken it off. But
I think killing Leslie Bibb just because she doesn't want to have the jack-o'-lantern lit is kind of weak. I don't know what that's all about. Like, understand that Sam is sort of this enforce the rules of Halloween thing, but like, I don't know, man. That seemed like he was going after people who really deserved it for a while, and then at the end of it, like, what did she do? Is it maybe she didn't help the woman they thought was drunk at the parade or whatever. Yeah. So
I don't know. Yeah, that is a little confusing. It seems a little... Well, that's one of the things I had written down that I admire about this movie in a weird way is this movie is not... Like, it's dark. Like, I mean, the whole storyline with the mentally disabled kids getting, like, they having their parents pay a bus driver off to kill them or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, that's like, God damn. And there is all kinds of child murder in this. The Leslie Bibb kill. I mean, a lot of the child killing's off screen, but it's still there. It's still, you know what's happening. The Leslie Bibb character getting killed is pretty mean spirited. But even despite that, Doherty is still able to like keep that fun, like Halloween thing going through the whole thing. And it's like, it's still kind of a fun movie in a weird way. I don't know how he does that, because I think Krampus, he also tries to do that with, and I don't think it works in Krampus.
God, yeah, Krampus. Yeah, Krampus was, I was not a huge fan.
Yeah, I know a lot of people like it, but yeah, I couldn't get into it. I hated those characters so much. It was like impossible to get on board with it. It was too much. Like, he went too far with it. Whereas here, he somehow plays that line perfectly where, like, I mean, this is rated R horror, like, no doubt. But at the same time, like, even though it's super, like, dark and there's child murder and stuff, it's still weirdly kind of fun. Like, not that specific part, but I'm just saying the movie as a whole, like, none of that takes you out of the movie or brings it down. I don't think it's great. I don't think it's perfect, but I think it's a really fun movie to watch around this time of year. I've probably watched it once every couple years, you know, since 2009 or whatever. So this is probably like my seventh time to see it or something.
Wow.
Yeah. It's fun. It's just a really fun movie. I mean, it's, you know, it's comparable to something like Creepshow as far as that goes. I think Creepshow is probably better, but it's still like, and it also, it's a fun movie that, and like I said, it's at Halloween. It feels like it's on Halloween. It feels like it's, you know, that time of year. I still think there's, like, it seems weird that they have that big of a downtown party, though, if it's that, like, some no-name town, but whatever.
Yeah. Exactly.
We could definitely send this movie. That would not be a problem.
And also, think about, you know, you go back and listen to them. I mean, I guess you could refer to any place that you've been as the next biggest town or whatever, but they're talking about big towns they've been. Well, remember a couple years ago when we were in Tampa, and then last year we were in Cleveland, you know, they were talking about big, big towns, and now they're in this podunk place.
Yeah.
Or whatever. But, you know, well, maybe they refer to this as like Cincinnati or something like that.
Yeah.
It's a fairly big town, but it's obviously a suburb of it or something like that.
So. Yeah, maybe it's the Salem of Ohio or something.
Maybe, yeah.
I also, it's going back to that kids thing. I don't know how you cover that up, though. That's crazy. But,
yeah.
And originally I found out that storyline with the kids and the jack-o'-lanterns, that was actually going to take place in a graveyard. And you were going to find out, they went and picked up Rhonda. They brought her to the graveyard, and then you find out all of them are ghosts, but Rhonda had forgotten she was one.
Oh.
But he thought that the person's dead the whole time, didn't know it. He just thought that was too much of a trope. But I just don't know how he went from that to, like, let's kill a bunch of mentally disabled children. Like, I don't know. That's a weird, like, you know, but I don't know.
And was the bus driver handing out poisoned candy before he was going to?
Yes, that's what I assume. I mean, or had razor blades in it or something.
Something like that. But I mean, I think he still intends to run it off into the quarry, though.
Well, that's the part I can't figure out, because I mean, maybe he was just going to push them off the quarry and then take the bus back. I don't know. But I don't know how you would explain that.
It's one of those things where the screenwriter knows where the plot's going, but does the character know where the plot's going?
Yeah.
You know, because it seems like they're always going to be there, because it'd be kind of hard to cover up the whole, like, poisoning the kids and just leaving the bus out there, you know, whatever, but I don't know.
And I was trying to figure out how to, because it is an anthology film, but it is different from most, but I guess it's not necessarily unique. I mean, there are other movies like this. Pulp Fiction is like this, for instance,
the
way it goes back and forth between the stories. But Pulp Fiction even still seems to focus longer on one set of people than this does. Because, I mean, and I always forget that, too. Like, I just kind of assume they play out, at least in the middle, but then I forget it. Oh, it cuts back to him, and then it cuts back to her, and it's just like... Mm.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I enjoy it though. It's a film for this type of year that I think is fun to watch, and it's a film that it's got a fan base. I mean, Sam is a Halloween costume like you can get at Party City, so mm-hmm. There's definitely people out there that enjoy it.
There's a fairly interesting discussion going on in chat here about what the intentions of the bus driver was. A couple of them. Mm-hmm. Slab and Nick both think that he was giving the candy as a kindness to the kids, but
maybe
Castro believes he's just checking on the chains that he's got around them during that time.
He
believes he's gonna put a brick on the gas pedal and then let the bus go off the quarry then. So who knows, man? It's not exactly clear what's going on there, but I thought that was an unusual little take, and in no matter how you look at it, it's freaking dark, like you were saying.
Yeah, and I think that definitely even makes it kind of almost sicker in a way, like the way like he's like actually like he's like being generous before he's gonna kill him. I mean, it's just it makes it creepier, I guess. I should say.
All right, I'm gonna go on to the super secret double feature.
Be very, very quiet.
Secret? What secret?
Our dirty little secret.
I tell you something I've never told anyone.
Man, there's obviously a lot of movies here that we could pick here. We've named a bunch of them that had actually run through. Creepshow is a good one. Pulp Fiction's a good one. And like I said, I was thinking about just doing a surprise one with Hoodwinked on this one. I just can't, just, you know, when I'm thinking about watching Hoodwinked and then Trick or Treat, or flip them even, didn't settle too well with me. So and then obviously VHS and things like that. I decided to go with another random horror anthology movie, and it's Tales from the Dark Side, the movie. This one came out in 1990, and it's about, you know, it has this one unifying story to it, which is a kid who's in Mrs. Doubtfire, by the way, is trapped in a cage. Debbie Harry is playing, I guess, what is basically a witch or something like that. She plans on cooking him. And in the meantime, while she's waiting for the oven to get hot enough to put this kid in, the kid has this book, Tales from the Dark Side, where he reads tales from it to sort of like as a stay of execution. And there are three different ones in there. One is about a mummy. It's got Steve Buscemi and it's got Julianne Moore and Christian Slater in it. Like Julianne Moore and Steve Buscemi, nobody knew who those people were back then. Christian Slater obviously was at the, like, getting near the peak of his popularity at this point when he's in Tales from the Dark Side. That's one story. The other, there's another story, I think Stephen King wrote it, that's about a killer cat.
Mm-hmm.
About a guy who I can't remember the actor's name, but you know him from National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation.
The older guy, yeah. I can't think of his name either.
He hires an assassin to kill the cat, and we hear all these different stories about how the cat definitely killed the other people in the house and he's the only one left and all that. And and then there's, I think George Romero wrote one in here too. I can't remember which one he wrote, but the last one is one featuring James Remar. It's a weird, like, love story / demon thing. And then, you know, it all gets, you know, none of the stories have anything to do with each other. And that's one, I think I was trying to come up with one where, like, all the stories are interwoven like this. But in the end, let's just go with something that's like, you know, that maybe some people have never heard of or haven't seen or whatever. Let's go with Tales from the Dark Side. So that's the one that I picked for this one.
Yeah, this was originally supposed to be Creepshow 3, which is why Romero and King are involved. But I don't remember why they changed it. I guess just because of the Tales from the Dark Side was a thing then. They thought that title would make more money. I'm not really sure.
Yeah, I guess it was a series, like, for what? How long it had been? Like, since, like, 83?
I don't remember the years. It was somewhere like in the mid 80s though. I think it was four seasons. And George Romero is the creator behind that show. I looked it up, but also Addis 417 said William Hickey is the name of the old guy.
Yeah, from, William Hickey is the guy.
And Buster Poindexter.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
We don't get Buster Poindexters anymore. Like people like that, no. Like Charo, and like that doesn't exist anymore. I don't even know how to explain that anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
We don't get the Love Boat guest stars. No, I love this movie. I own it. I watched it. I saw it as a kid. I've seen it a dozen times. It's just, it's so much fun. It's just, that's the way I think I love these anthology things. Cause I just like these short, quick stories, and I don't know. They're always just really fun to me. And this is definitely one of the better ones.
Yeah.
In my opinion. So
it is, I didn't realize that this was supposed to be Creepshow 3. So here I was trying to avoid Creepshow and ended up doing Creepshow anyway.
And they did make a Creepshow 3 like 7 or 8 years ago. Do not watch it. It is, I don't even know who did it. It's like super, super low budget. Like some company must have just bought the name or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But Creepshow 2, worth a watch. Not as fun as the first one, but it's decent.
First one is incredible. Yeah. I love it so much. Okay. For next week, Aaron will be back. But thank you, Jonathan, for filling in this week and coming in last week as well. This was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
So next week we'll be doing our live show typically on Tuesday, and it'll still be October, but the release of the podcast will be the following week, and the following week just happens to be election week. So I decided to dip back down into another favorite from 1999, and that's Alexander Payne's Election, which we will be doing next week. This is one of my all-timers. I have probably seen this movie 15 to 20 times in my life. So this is a fantastic one, well-written, well-acted, and has a lot of tremendous irony in it. I'm going to be happy to like introduce this to some people out there who have never seen Election. I can't wait to delve into this one.
Nice.
So that will be next week. All right. That's going to do it for this week. Chat, thanks for coming out. We're back on our regular time now and everything. Thanks to all y'all who came out on the Mondays as well. And appreciate that. Next week is election, and we will see you next time.
Bye.
See ya. Bye. Be a part of the live show by being a member of the Sin Club at Patreon at patreon.com/cinemasins. Chat with us on the CinemaSins Discord at discord.gg/cinemasins or CinemaSins Twitter at CinemaSins, and email any comments or questions to recotopia@cinemasins.com. That's recotopia@cinemasins.com.